What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Simon Chamorro was born and raised in Caracas, Venezuela. He co-founded Value to make it easier to transfer money from Colombia to Venezuela by streamlining remittances using cryptocurrency. In this conversation, we discuss Bitcoin, stablecoins, Venezuela, Latin America, hyperinflation, El Salvador, and what the true situation on the ground is from a monetary standpoint. I really enjoyed this conversation with Simon, and I'm proud to be an investor in the business that he's building. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. First up is Gemini. Gemini is one of those businesses you just got to know if you're in the industry. I've interviewed a number of people from their team before, and I tend to think that they're taking the right approach to helping usher forward this industry. Gemini is a leading regulated cryptocurrency exchange, wallet, and custodian that makes it simple and secure to buy, sell, store, and earn Bitcoin, Ether, and over 40 other cryptocurrencies. They're offering industry-leading security, insurance, and uptime. Gemini is the go-to trusted platform for beginner and sophisticated investors alike. You can open a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/pomp and get $20 of Bitcoin after you trade $100 or more within the first 30 days. Again, you can go to Gemini and open a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/pomp, and then you'll get $20 of Bitcoin after you trade $100 or more within the first 3 days. Go check it out and let me know what you think. Next up is Miami Makers Month. It is a virtual hackathon for hackers, designers, and creators who are passionate about creating apps to benefit the city of Miami. They've got $25,000 in total prizes, which will be awarded to developers who build the winning apps on Miami Coin. What is Miami Coin? It's far more than a currency. Miami Coin is a community launch platform for innovation built on top of Bitcoin and Stacks, the network that enables apps and smart contracts for Bitcoin. Miami Coin is generating real-world value. The protocol has already generated over $3 million in contributions reserved for the city, and the project is just getting started. You can visit miamimakers.co to learn more and get involved. Again, you can visit miamimakers.co to learn more. Miami Makers Month is definitely something that you're going to want to check out. Last but not least are our friends over at LMAX. LMAX Digital is the number one institutional crypto exchange. They offer clients the deepest pool of crypto liquidity on the planet. It's underscored by 100% uptime track record through volatility spikes. Leveraging LMAX Group's liquidity relationships and ultra-low latency technology, LMAX Digital is the market-leading solution for institutional crypto trading and custodial services. They feature a central limit order book, streaming spot Bitcoin, Ether, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash, all paired with US dollars, euro, and yen. LMAX Digital, if you've never heard of them, it's because they only serve institutional clients, no retail. LMAX Digital, secure, liquid, and trusted. You can learn more at lmaxdigital.com/pomp. Again, lmaxdigital.com/pomp. Go check it out and let me know what you think. All right, let's get into this episode with Simon. I really hope you guys enjoy this one.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guest as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, Simon's here. How are you, man?
Oh, good, man. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Yeah. Let's start with Value. What are you guys building? What is the goal here?
So in simple terms, we are a business first crypto payments solutions for Latin America. And we are focused in Venezuela, which is going through hyperinflation. And because of that, people are looking for stable currencies, right, for new solutions. And the interesting thing is that typically vendors are the ones who set the medium and the currency that they want to accept, right? So being a business-first solution is actually an interesting way to tackle this problem, because we're focusing on giving businesses a way to charge in stablecoins, their customers. And in a way, we're creating this marketplace dynamic within consumers and businesses. And the final objective, let's say, is to create crypto economies in Latin America. So that's, yeah.
How bad is the situation? So Latin America obviously has multiple countries that make up this. Do you want to talk about Venezuela first or kind of the whole region? Which one's easier to talk about?
Whew. So from this can be tackled from political perspective, from an economic perspective. Mm-hmm. I think that we can talk about Latin America as a whole.
Okay.
Because our objective in the end is to serve the entire region. But Venezuela is kind of the initial market. So whichever way.
Okay. Let's do Venezuela first, then we'll talk about the kind of the entire region. Everyone knows Venezuela has gone through hyperinflation. It used to be the richest country now in the region. Now it is not. And it feels like those who could leave have left. And there's some folks who just can't leave for whatever reason. So they're stuck there. How bad is the situation on the ground? And like, what do you see on a day-to-day basis around the currency or other businesses?
Yeah. So the situation is really bad. It's been bad for 20 years. We had a dictatorship, a narco state. The Venezuelan regime is sanctioned by OFAC. They all have prices on their head, right, by like the FBI. And they have control of everything. They have total power. So a good example to like try to bring people from the US to what it is over there. So the minimum wage is $1 currently in dollar terms. And some years the price inflation gets up to 10,000%. So
Wow. Yeah,
in 2019 it was 10,000%. So imagine trying to live with $1 a month, right? Like 12 months a year, $12 a year and 10,000% price inflation.
How do people do it?
I don't know, man. Like it's really hard. Like people are starting businesses. There's a lot of entrepreneurship. That's kind of like one of the brightest sides of things. Mm-hmm. There's a very entrepreneurial vein, I would say. And because you can start selling food, arepas, like cakes to your families, to your friends. So you have these like hyper-local communities of people selling goods and services to their community. And everybody sells to each other. So that's a way some of these communities are like maintaining themselves. Mm-hmm. And more recently, since 2019, the country started to get dollarized, mm-hmm. informally dollarized, which mm-hmm. means that there's no direct relationship with the Fed. It's a dollarization that is coming in cash and that is coming through unknown sources. Mm-hmm. And so you have kind of like these elites having stability, and that stability within the elite spreads through the kind of like people around them, right? Mm-hmm. So that's another way people are kind of like getting by.
So slowly the country becomes more and more dollarized, even though there's not this direct relationship, and also it's a sanctioned country. But as simple as somebody came to the US, they got $10 in their pocket, they go back, now they have ten single dollar bills, and then they spend it and it gets into the economy. There's like very low level examples, and then I'm sure there's very complex ways that dollars get into the economy, which I don't want to go there. But there is some dollarization. For the average person in Venezuela right now, as they watch, and as you mentioned in 2019, 10,000% inflation, what currency do they want? Do they want Bolivar? Do they want dollars? They want gold? They want Bitcoin? They want the euro? Like, how do they think through the evaluation of their options, given that their currency is basically being destroyed right before their eyes?
Yeah. So for many years, they haven't been wanting the Bolivar, the local fiat. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, 2017, there was a small, especially in the young population, but Latin America is quite a young population in mm-hmm. general. Mm-hmm. And people were starting to adopt Bitcoin, mainly in peer-to-peer exchanges. That was kind of like the main way to do it. And because dollars were not an option in Venezuela specifically. While Latin America is highly dollarized, and Argentina, you have access to dollars. Ecuador is fully dollarized. Mm-hmm. El Salvador, you have access to dollars. But in Venezuela, that was not an option. So at the time, crypto was the only option. Mm-hmm. When the country started to get dollarized, and because of the fact that the dollar is trusted mm-hmm. by most people outside of the United States, everybody started to want the dollar, specifically because Bitcoin price volatility currently mm-hmm. is too much to sustain for people that can't save,
yep.
essentially. They don't have the ability to save. They need their money.
Because they don't make enough
And then there are expenses. There's basically no delta. If I make the equivalent of $5 and my monthly expenses are $5, I have nothing to save, right? That's why they can't save.
Exactly, which is an opportunity actually, because the middle class is actually decreasing. Mm-hmm. Recently, there was an article that Sequoia launched that says rising middle class in Latin America. And there's a bunch of buzz around Latin America. The reality is that it's not rising, it's decreasing. And the reason why it's decreasing is because there's multiple kind of like reasons why that is decreasing. But a good solution for that is lending money to small businesses and medium businesses that have been squeezed by the large businesses in general. Mm-hmm. There's a huge wealth inequality. And so if we lend in stable currencies, such as the US dollar or in stable coins, people are going to have the ability to save, especially if those savings have interest-bearing yields. So that's a huge opportunity for crypto companies to kind of like help the middle class grow. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
And when you think about what you guys are doing, explain how you're giving people dollar exposure in that country.
So we essentially give them a digital dollar, and people, the way they see it is a digital dollar. Mm-hmm. They don't really care if it's a stable coin in the back. Mm-hmm. What we do is that we partner with Fireblocks, a company from Israel, mm-hmm. and we essentially back our value dollar. We call it the value dollar, which is an IOU, is centralized. Mm-hmm. And because of the fact that it's centralized, it allows for people to send it to each other at no cost. Mm-hmm. It's not like on-chain transactions. Because our objective right now is to prove that people and businesses at large, like in the economy, they are going to be able to transition fully to a dollar-based or like digital dollar economy. Mm-hmm. Once that problem is solved, which is much harder than just creating a token, right? Mm-hmm. Most companies just create a token and then they figure out, oh, let's see where can we put it. Mm-hmm. For us, it was more interesting to figure out how can we make people and businesses trust in this digital dollar. Mm-hmm. How can we make them use it every day? Mm-hmm. So we essentially created this IOU backed in USDC in Fireblocks. And once we reach critical mass, we may think about like, hey, let's now just give them exposure to this token, which is going to be interchangeable for any other cryptocurrency that they want.
And how's it going so far in terms of the, and I should have said this up front, I'm an investor in value, so I'm a very big believer in this, but how's it going in terms of getting the merchant adoption?
It's been good, really good, actually, yeah. So an interesting thing that I'm going to allude to really quickly is that we started with remittances to Venezuela because we now have about 6 million migrants, 6 to 7 million migrants. This is about 1 in 3 Venezuelans or 1 in 4 Venezuelans have left, migrated.
Wow.
These people are typically 18 to 40 year olds, the productive class. And the people that are staying are younger people in high school or older people that are not working as much. So our hypothesis was, you know, these people are going to completely depend on remittances. Let's help the people that are migrating send stable coins rather than send them bolivars, which is the hyperinflationary currency, which mm-hmm. is what's already happening at large. Venezuela became the second largest remittance recipient after Mexico in the entire region. And Mexico, of course, holds the number one place mm-hmm. because of the US corridor. Mm-hmm. And so that was our hypothesis. Let's dollarize Venezuela through remittances as a vehicle, mm-hmm. using kind of like crypto as a bridge. We realized that we could do it immediately. Remittances because of the fact that it's on crypto. Mm-hmm. We could do it on stable currencies, which is a stable remittances. But the price, it's actually not great because when you want to send remittances using crypto as a bridge, you have to go through the on and off ramps. And you have to on ramp from fiat in the country of the sender, and you have to off-ramp in Venezuela because people are not using crypto as a means of exchange. And it's not being used as a unit of account in the country. So you end up paying 6% in the on and off-ramp fees, one in one country and the other one 3 and 3. And that's not super effective. compared to like Western Union and other systems. So we realized that remittances can only be effective in crypto if the recipient country has uses crypto as a means of exchange. So we've said to ourselves, let's refocus the entire business and to help businesses use this product. And it's going really well. We changed this year at the beginning. Now we have a business account and a personal account, very similar to Venmo here in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's just backed in stablecoins. And we're signing up about 150 businesses per day. And out of those 150 businesses, 50 of them are getting to the aha moment, like experiencing the core value of the product, which is protecting themselves from inflation. They're buying stablecoins with their bolivars, or they're charging their customers with bolivars. So it's working. It's working really well. And our entire focus is to focus on retention. Mm-hmm. Because in reality, as I mentioned before, technologies change, right? Mm-hmm. Like they will continue to change. So for any form of money, retention tells a pretty clear story on if people really trust in this product. So now that's what that entire focus of the company is on, retention for businesses. Yeah.
What questions you guys got?
When you're kind of on the ground, right, and you're talking to some of the people that live in these countries in Venezuela and others around there, what are you hearing from them in regards to how they feel about crypto specifically versus kind of the traditional assets or currencies that they're used to?
It's interesting because initially in 2017, we're getting to the point where crypto already is an unstoppable force. It's already too big. Everybody has heard about it. And in 2017, it was kind of like the Bitcoin adoption. Then we got dollarized. And because of the fact that the dollarization is informal and it's highly inefficient because it's in cash, people don't have change because the cash bills are limited. You don't have ones and fives. People have like 20s and 50s. So there's a bunch of problems with this dollarization. So people are turning again to see, okay, what are the other forms of money? Like stablecoins, and they're now more interested in Bitcoin. They're asking us a lot about like, hey, can we get Bitcoin in value? So I do believe that stablecoins is the best segue to other cryptocurrencies and sound money as Bitcoin. But the trend is looking better now towards like what people think about Bitcoin. And in general, in Latin America, what's interesting is that we've been studying how people use crypto a lot. We've been trying to solve hyperinflation for 4 years in the company. And most of the volumes in Latin America, which actually are not very large in terms of global, like we only hold like 7% of the global volumes, one of the lowest regions. But most of these volumes happen in peer-to-peer exchanges, and they happen in through retail. And what we're seeing is that people are trying to use crypto not as a speculative asset to trade, but actually to pay, to protect themselves from inflation, to save, which is an awesome opportunity because those are the properties that money serves, that cryptocurrencies should serve. I'm highly, highly positive about the future of crypto in Latam. Yeah,
it's great.
And then it seems like the goal is to replace their current currency, which is the Bolivar.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Can you talk about like just the digital switch that Venezuela is seeing from kind of that cash perspective of handing over the 20s and the 50s versus using any type of digital
20s and 50s?
He said there's no ones and fives.
I know.
Yeah. So can you just talk about like the digital switch and how important is that obviously to when you're trying to go to a stable coin or a Bitcoin and use that as the currency?
Yeah. So that's a really good question. So I'm going to really quickly talk about the dollarization in Venezuela. So there's two ways. The first one is cash, which you just mentioned. The second one is that Venezuelan elites, most of the elites, have been flying to the United States, opening bank accounts here, getting offshore accounts, and now they're using Venmo sell the Interbank app, and they're going back to Venezuela, and they're kind of like exchanging goods and services with each other, paying with Zelle and Venmo. Mm-hmm. And it started with the leads, and now it's spreading through kind of like the, I wouldn't call it the middle class, but like other entrepreneurs and things like that.
And so these are people who go open up US-based bank accounts.
Yeah.
Come back to Venezuela, and then they're transacting, but it's in the US-based accounts rather than in the Venezuela accounts.
I think there's an economic theory for that called the milkshake theory, which is like, you know, the United States is such a large power that it's basically sucking in a few other economies. Like people and businesses in emerging economies want to transact and have dollars. Mm-hmm. So this is a perfect example of that. And it's happening at large. And another thing that is happening is because we have a large migration, especially now in the US. Recently, the United States announced that all the people that were living here that are Venezuelan are going to have a really easy way to become residents. And you can also get like political protection because Venezuela is like this crazy place. And so you have a bunch of migrants from Venezuela here, actually in Florida. And these people are renting their Zelle accounts. They literally rent them to people in Venezuela. And people in Venezuela are paying up to 30% to use a Zelle account.
Wow.
So, of course, that translates into higher prices. So that's a way people are kind of like moving into the digital dollar economy. And it's becoming like a trusted way of doing it. The cash dollar economy is very interesting because, as I mentioned, people don't have cash. And because... So if I go and pay in a supermarket and the product is worth $8, $8.50, the supermarket prices it at $10 because they don't have...
they don't have the ones and the fives. Still.
But I need my $1.50 because it's a lot of money in Venezuela. So I end up not buying. And it, you know, reduces kind of like commerce. And and then the supermarket says, oh, I'll give you your change in bolivars, but I don't want the freaking bolivars. Yeah. So it just has a bunch of loopholes. And I'm really positive of like the path to stablecoins because of this specific dynamics that I just mentioned. People see stablecoins as digital dollars, period. And they see the benefits of it. They see that they can pay in exact amounts. They see that they can hold it in their phones. They don't have to carry large amounts of cash. Businesses sometimes do, like they have to pay their providers in cash, and their providers charge them large amounts of cash in dollars. Sometimes they have to drive from state to state with a bunch of money, mm-hmm. and they're just like scared all the time.
So you don't know this, but now you do. I carry this in my wallet. This is a 50 Bolivar, right?
Yeah.
I also carry in my wallet. This is a $10 billion Zimbabwe currency. Yeah. So 50, 10 billion, both worthless. How many of these do I need to pay for things in Venezuela? So there's only 50.
There's a really good picture on Google if they want to look it up.
We have the picture, I think.
Chicken.
Where's the chicken with the with the Bolivar? We'll pull it up here in a second.
Yeah.
How much is a chicken?
So it changes all the fucking time. Like,
is it true that the prices in the stores almost change in like near real time, that they have like these digital prices and they basically just can change them as the currency changes?
At one point in time, that was happening. Like you would go to the store in the morning and in the middle of the day it was a different price and at night it was a different price.
High.
Sometimes they even didn't have details. So the store owners would have to like just change it by hand or whatever, and it was crazy.
Find out the price at the register.
Kind of, yeah.
Just find out the loaf of the bread when you get to the register.
It was definitely crazy. Now the inflation of prices is not as crazy as it was one point in time. Mm-hmm. The past 3 months, the inflation in prices has been about 22% during a 3-month period.
It's crazy that that's not bad.
No, that's really good for Venezuela.
I was just looking up the numbers earlier, and it says that there was certainly what you said earlier about 10,000% in 2019, but it says since 2016, the overall inflation rate has increased 54,000%.
There's a really interesting way to explain this, which is
wow.
The $1 today is 4 million bolivars. Sounds like a lot, but
there's a picture.
Oh, that's a chicken, yeah.
Yeah, pull it up. To buy that chicken, that's how many bolivar you need.
On that day, it changes.
Yeah.
Buy it. That is a wild photo.
Yeah.
That you literally need twice the space to carry the cash there to buy it than it takes to carry it home.
Yeah, so now you see bolivars in the streets, like just thrown in the streets. You see people doing like handbags with it because it's paper, yeah. Right? And it works for art and for other things. So people are trying to like make the paper worth something, because the denomination is worth nothing. So going back to the 4 million thing, let's just
so $1 is 4 million bolivar.
4 million bolivars in October. 10, I think we're going to, the government is going to take out 6 zeros out of it. And and so the $1 will be 4 bolivars.
I'm laughing because this is so fucking absurd.
Yeah.
But the Venezuelan government says $1 equals 4 bolivar. We're going to make it, 4 million bolivar. We're going to make it 1 equals 4. So we're just going to slash the 6 zeros off and pretend they don't exist.
Exactly. This is the third time they're doing this to control inflation, but it's really just like a way for people
psychologically.
It's psychological. And I guess it's a way for them to give strength to the bolivar, because now people are going to be able to use cash. They're potentially going to print some bills. It's going to quickly and rapidly go back to millions, which has already happened. But this is the third time they do it. They've already taken 8 zeros, 5 in one opportunity, 3 in another opportunity. So in reality, when we're talking about $1, we're talking about 4 plus 14 zeros. And if you can correct me, I believe that's $40 trillion, or 40 trillion bolivars per $1. That's the inflation we're experiencing. So it's the ideal breeding ground for new forms of money.
It is nuts to me how bad the situation is. If Venezuela had been Bitcoinized, would any of this have happened? Like, is it simply a monetary policy, just undisciplined? We can get rich if we print a bunch of money, so we're going to do it, and you enrich the government?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely of the train of thought that like Bitcoin fixes this for sure. The only problem is that to get to the Bitcoin standard, as I mentioned, we need a rising economy and more wealth generation being created, so people can save, so people can invest, etc. So it's as simple of like give people in emerging economies the stable coins to level the playing field, and then give everyone Bitcoin. That's the master plan, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what about the other areas in the region? So Venezuela, people can feel it. Like, it sucks, right? It's a horrible situation. You guys are doing a great job of trying your best to provide a currency that doesn't get devalued, trying to get it into people's hands, educate them, etc. What about the rest of the region? What's the situation?
The situation is very interesting, because Colombia, Peru, and for example, Chile, were countries that were smaller in GDP. And the past 20 years, they have been increasing because they were just like really small. Brazil, in the contrary, was already a big economy, but it's decreasing, similar to Mexico and Argentina. So the reality of Latin America is that the middle class continues to decrease in growth. Wealth inequality continues to increase. Currency stability is happening, instability is happening in every Latin American country. So, you know, price inflation, for example, in Colombia, in a few other countries, is not as bad. But the currency depreciation against USD or other stronger forms of fiat is really bad in Brazil, in every country. So fiat currencies tend to have really low network effects in Latin America, like nobody wants them. And so the opportunity for Latin America as a whole, and again, if you look at the on-chain data, a lot of the on-chain data is showing that depreciation of USD, of the currency against USD, relative to the usage of crypto in peer-to-peer exchanges is highly correlated. Mm-hmm. And so I do believe that all the problems in Latin America, like the foundational problem we have to solve is solving money.
Yeah.
Commerce is still at 6% online commerce, which is not super high. But the good thing about Latin America, so I've been talking about all this shit. The good thing about Latin America is that we have an established middle class. It's decreasing in growth, mm-hmm. but it's more established than India or other regions. Mm-hmm. We have a GDP that is twice the size of India, a population that is twice the size of the United States, an internet penetration that is higher than China and India. At 70%. One of the highest engagements of internet usage in the world at 9 hours per day. So a relatively young population. So the only problem we need to solve is the freaking money problem. Mm-hmm.
Because it's basically people are online. They know how to use the tools. You have a young, large population. It's growing quickly. The problem is the money is wrong. It's
exactly. Bad. Exactly. So that's kind of like the general situation down in Latin America. And another cool stat is that in the past 6 months, VC money has increased a lot. I think $9 billion were invested or even more than $9 billion in VC money in high risk startups that mm-hmm. are solving these type of issues. We have about 2 dozen unicorns, about 24 unicorns, which is kind of like new for the region. And out of those 24, about 3 are crypto startups or exchanges.
Wow. So 24 unicorns in Latin America, 3 are crypto.
Yeah.
It's pretty big.
It's pretty big compared to other regions. So hopefully we're going to see more of that.
Value will be $1 billion company.
Of course.
Let's go.
Of course. It's a winner take all crypto economies.
Yeah.
For sure.
What do you think about El Salvador in terms of them obviously embracing Bitcoin? Mostly we'll just hear the Western perspective, like the North American perspective of just, hey, Bitcoin is good. El Salvador is embracing it. How do you think about the way they're doing it, the fact that they're doing it? What were your thoughts?
Yeah. So the law is going into effect in about 5 days, right? I think. I am not like super into the whole like political regulatory thing and like reading the laws and all that. I'm kind of like more like 10,000 feet above that. And what I can say is that, interestingly enough, Bitcoin is being adopted first by dictators. You know, in Venezuela is similar, like, there's nothing we can do about it anyways. Bitcoin mm-hmm. is open, right? Which is an interesting thing, right? Nobody can do anything about it. If they want to use it, that's okay. Like mm-hmm. it's an open system that is not controlled by anybody. But in El Salvador, I think just because your listeners potentially are mostly American, I really just wanted to say that it's really easy to kind of like be excited about this if you haven't lived through the bad things that have been done by these people, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you really don't know the history,
mm-hmm.
El Salvador is not Singapore, right? Like, they're both dictatorships. And, you know, it's great that, you know, a dictator can say, hey, now everybody will use Bitcoin because I say so. But again, it's a very different thing from doing that in Singapore, where there's like wealth and one of the highest GDPs per capita compared to El Salvador, which is highly poor. The entire power is controlled by their brothers and mm-hmm. this guy. I am interested to see how this will happen, but I'm highly skeptical of Bitcoin being good as a whole. I think there's just like similar to Venezuela, we had the first regulatory entity in Latin America for regulating crypto.
Mm-hmm.
It's now happening in Cuba, and across like the board, you can just see that these laws are not necessarily to help people, but to like make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm just dropping some like real facts here.
Yeah. Right?
What
do you think are the important things for people to pay attention to as it gets rolled out? Are there specific things that you would say, hey, you know, these are going to be the ways that we know whether this is a net positive or a net negative?
I think we're going to have to see some on-chain data. The solutions that are there, I think Strike, I think the El Salvador government is launching their own wallet. I don't know if that wallet is going to be, I think it's built on top of Lightning Network, but there's another interesting kind of, I guess, moral thing, right? Like, they're highly KYC-ing people, but in the end, I do believe that it's better to give people optionality to have Bitcoin than not having it. So it's better to have it with KYC than not having it at all. Things to pay attention to, I think, we're just gonna have to wait and see. I will be waving my magic hand here. I lived in hyperinflation myself in Venezuela, and you know,
You do when you're living through hyperinflation? Like, what do you do?
I was very young at the time, so. What the first thing you start to do is try to get your money out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents started to, for example, invest in real estate outside of Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing they knew kind of how to do. You start thinking about like getting the hell out of there.
Out of the country itself.
Out of the country. Because hyperinflation is just a byproduct of total mismanagement of the monetary policy and the country in general.
Mm-hmm.
So while you are there, people tend to spend all their money, which is interesting. Like, people don't have like, saving starts to become something less interesting. And when you don't have access to other stronger forms of money, which happened in the early stages of inflation in Venezuela, 2010 to 2015, people would just spend their money. They would rather go and go to a fancy restaurant or buy a bottle of rum instead of just keeping their cash.
Mm-hmm.
So it creates behaviors that are not good for people in general. It pushes people to have those bad financial behaviors.
It's crazy. What you guys got any other questions?
No, that's
one person crazy. Someone in the chat asked that I thought was really interesting. What is like the medium of exchange? Like, how are people as like two friends and they want to exchange money? Like, how are they doing? Are they using those like Venmo and Zelle apps, or are they using the Bolivar with cash, or are they trying to use like, how are they like kind of interacting with each other?
Yeah. So if it depends, if you are in kind of like the, in the 1%, you use Venmo and Zelle for mm-hmm. sure. If you can also use cash dollars, it's being used a lot. A lot of the people from the 1% fly to the United States, open a bank account, get as much cash as they can. Sometimes they even fly with more than $10,000, which is the legal thing. They just take all the cash possible to Venezuela that they can. Cash is also used. And but I do want to mention something interesting, which is we have a product in Venezuela, interbank product called Pago Móvil. Pago Móvil is like Zelle in bolivars. And people that are not living in the capital, which is Caracas, use it a lot. 80% of the transactions that our businesses are reporting that they are receiving through Pago Móvil in bolivars. Still, they're still using the bolivar, just a digital form of it. And you still see that trend in the hoods, or let's say on the less wealthy neighborhoods of Caracas, which is basically most of Caracas, of the capital. And so a lot of people still use bolivars, and businesses are using, are getting paid in bolivars at 80% of their transactions. So they do have a treasury to manage in hyperinflationary money. And again, that's another opportunity we're trying to leverage on and just kind of like help all these businesses start to adopt stable coins and digital dollars. Yeah.
Hey, good luck on that.
I got two questions for you, then we'll wrap up. First one is, what's next for Value? As you guys continue to build, what's kind of the plan moving forward, and how can people who are watching this help you?
Yeah, so currently we're focused on the lower hanging fruit, which is SMEs, small and medium-sized businesses in Venezuela who don't have access to any form of digital dollars. The larger companies, retail companies, huge, they do have access to US banking. So we're focused first on this group. And after that, we're going to start focusing on the larger retail businesses, because while they do have access to USD, they have all these issues that I'm not going to get into right now with their treasury that we can solve with like crypto infra and like stable coins. So once we start tackling the large businesses, we're going to have a vertically integrated payment supply chain, which is kind of like the checkmate for retention for this currency, for a new type of money. When a business that is receiving payment from their customers in stablecoins can also pay their providers in the same stablecoin. And so that's kind of like what's going next for us. And after that, we're going to start thinking about monetization. Mm-hmm. And that's when we start to think about how can we lend to people. We're going to have enough transactional data to create risk models. So we're going to start lending, ideally increasing the middle class. We can start providing interest bearing accounts. And once we have this kind of like, we're going to be able to monetize in multiple ways. Once we have this in place, we're going to start to think about Brazil, Argentina, and Mexico. That's how we plan to win in Latin America, basically.
I think you're going to do it. Yeah. last question. What do you think Bitcoin's price hits by the end of the year? We're sitting around 50,000 right now. What's your end of year Bitcoin price prediction?
Let's say 100K.
100K?
100K, yeah.
All right. So we go from 50 to 100K by the end of the year.
Yeah.
If Bitcoin hits 100K by the end of the year, what changes in Latin America for people with Bitcoin? Is it just seen as an investment and people who are holding Bitcoin, obviously it appreciates, they're excited. Does that change the way that people think about it, adopt it, or nothing changes?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely going to continue to increase trust, which mm-hmm. again, trust is... it's everything in any form of money. It's going to help a lot of people that have exposure to Bitcoin and that are not necessarily wealthy. Most of the people that adopt crypto and Bitcoin are like middle class and elites, but you still have a portion of people that are kind of like poor that have somehow adopted Bitcoin. So if that happens, it will continue to take some people out of poverty, which is awesome. And I think that what I really want to see is like at one point in time, is Bitcoin going to be, what is the floor of volatility? And if the floor of volatility starts to reduce every time, you know, there's like a bull market or a bear market, when the bear market, you know, hits the bottom, if it's less of an aggressive percentage over time, it's going to be seen as a more or less volatile currency. And in turn is going to be used for like payments, ideally with Lightning Network and those things. So, yeah.
It feels to me like Latin America the stats you laid out with the internet penetration, just the unbanked population, and then also this like macro tailwind of a really bad economic situation naturally forces people to look for other alternatives. And so whether it's the stablecoin, whether it's Bitcoin, just these rails, this industry, this technology ends up pretty much capturing people's imagination to say, yes, this is the solution.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Where can we send people to find you on the internet?
Twitter, Simon Valiu. So Valiu is V-A-L-I-U. And same on Instagram. And you can log up Valiu on my profile as well and find us there. The website is in Spanish, I think, and all these things are in Spanish, but yeah.
I'm putting your, for anyone who wants to follow him, I'm putting him right now in the chat, his Twitter account, so make sure you go follow him. And you actually linked, I think, is the /EN, right? Yeah, /EN. So yeah. They'll get it in English rather than me, who I type in Valiu, and I always get it. I have to remind myself that while I live in Miami, and Miami is arguably the actual language of Miami or Spanish is, I can't speak it. So yeah. John's working on it. John's getting closer, right?
Yeah.
All right, man. Listen, thank you so much for doing this. I think obviously the problem is really, really bad in Latin America, Venezuela specifically, and I think there's millions and millions of people who can be helped. So keep going, and I'm excited to be along for the ride.
Thank you, man.